This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm delighted to welcome back Bradley for his triumphant return from parenthood. Mention two sponsors really briefly before we get into it tonight. Silent Light returns for another week. Silent Light is an app that helps you manage, monitor and manage the noise level in your classroom and give feedback to students with a simple traffic light system. And we welcome a new sponsor this week, Jamf Software, makers of the Casper Suite, which we've mentioned a couple of times on the show. We'll tell you more about Jamf and Silent Light as the show goes on. Bradley, welcome back.
It's good to be back.
Yes, indeed.
Adjusting to two-kid life. So I guess, we talked before I left, you know, thinking it would be late July when we had the baby, but we had a feeling like that last week in June when my wife went into the doctor's appointment, like she was already 3 centimeters dilated. And her doctor had even said, like, jokingly, like, you could come back next week and be 6 and I will send you to the hospital.
I took that very seriously when he said that, even though my wife kind of didn't. So I spent that weekend like getting my newborn son's room ready, even though he wouldn't sleep in there for weeks, but we were going to have pictures and whatnot. If any of you have kids, you know how that goes. So painting and really killing myself. Well, came in Tuesday to work and planned on not being there for a week or so. And so Wednesday she had a doctor's appointment and she called me about 11 and said, we're going to the hospital. So it's kind of like it's a marvel of medical science. Like, we went to Chick-fil-A, which I don't know that you've ever eaten at a Chick-fil-A, Fraser. It's like it's like a chicken sandwich place here in the South. It's really good. We went to Chick-fil-A about 11:30. I'm supposed to be there at noon. So like, I go inside, it's like really busy. So I go inside and I said, go to the front of the line. I said, ma'am, I said, my wife's about to go into labor. Can we get ahead of you? And she let me right in. And we got some lunch, drove over to the hospital, had lunch in the car and went in and checked in at noon, got into our room about 1, had the baby at 4. So we kind of went on and did our thing. I was ready to go home. That's the difference between one kid and two kids. You know, when you have the first kid, you just want to stay there as long as they let you because you don't have a clue what you're doing. With the second kid, you're just ready to get the heck out of there and go home. So yeah, we had the kid, came 3 weeks early. His name is Nate Wesley Chambers, not Nathan or Nathaniel, just straight Nate.
Okay.
Because we wanted him to be called Nate throughout his life. So we just figured might as well call him that. He was 6 pounds, 6 ounces and everything's doing well. Adjusting to two kid life, not getting as much sleep as we'd like, but my wife is getting even less than me. Something about the whole genetics thing.
Yeah, she's primed for that, I think.
Yeah, I really think that I would not be a good female if I had to do some of the things that females do. I would just have a dog.
Yeah, I think they deserve all our respect.
Yes, yes. So good to be back. I took about a week off work and been kind of working a lighter schedule at work, going in a little bit later, getting home a little bit earlier. But we're adjusting, and it actually worked out a lot better for me work-wise because I got to take a little bit extra time off because it was like right around the 4th of July, which is apparently a big deal in America. And a lot of people take off anyways. Something about some war that America won years ago. I don't know what that's about.
I couldn't possibly comment. I'm Scottish. I don't know anything about winning wars.
But so I got to take it about a week and a half off. So that was good. My wife appreciated that. And obviously it was good to get to stay home. But, now we're back at school and it's officially August. So that means it's like the countdown to school starting. So we start on August the 14th. So I've been very busy trying to get like our student management system ready to go from a database perspective, getting the new fiscal year set up so we can take payments for lunch and things like that. So, but thanks for filling in for everything while I was gone. It was nice to get to actually listen to the show. Cause I don't listen when I'm on it because hearing my own voice like stresses me out a little bit. So I refuse to re-listen to them most of the time.
Oh, well, you're in for a treat. A little bit of relaxation.
Yes.
Such as it is.
So, great shows while I was gone. It was kind of neat to get different perspectives on things like, hearing about classroom design and things like that was really fun.
Yeah, it was great to have Don on. He was, I visited his school a couple of years ago, like I mentioned in one of the shows, and it was a very interesting time. We spent some good time together and obviously got to know each other better since then. But his school is very interesting and very different to, my experience or the experience of a lot of other teachers. So it was good to get his perspective as well. And, of course, the whole kind of Silicon Valley thing is an interesting challenge for him to deal with and also a great opportunity.
Well, yeah, I would think, like, if you're you know, like I can, you know, make changes internally and parents don't generally question. They kind of assume I'm the expert. Mm-hmm. But if you're like in Silicon Valley, like most of your parents probably know more than you. I know that it would be if it was me out there. I'd be like calling my parents like, hey, yeah, have you dealt with this issue before? You know, that's, yeah, it'd be different environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely a challenge. And, you know, a lot of parents like to complain about school IT, but not all of them do it from such a position of strength as people working for some of those companies, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So how are things, I guess, with you guys getting ready for the new school year? When do you guys start back?
Yeah, well, we are 3 weeks away from starting back. You can probably hear on my recording that I'm in a slightly larger room today. I'm actually in my classroom. It's 8:30 at night and I'm in my classroom. But I'm surrounded by piles of iPad cases. Don't have any iPads yet. Those are coming in a little while. But we got the cases a couple of weeks ahead and we've been just counting them out and putting them into class sets. And the amount of packaging you have to get rid of just for the cases is insane. But we're getting through that job. I've managed to get them all out of their boxes now. They come in boxes of four, and we've got 90 of them to get. So quite a lot of opening boxes and cutting tape and so on.
Your hands just get like, you know, for opening those boxes, even if you have knives, you're still pulling things. And I remember I've still got some iPad cases that are missing in action from China, which that's actually a problem because I need to get some here quickly. So that's not great. But like I was putting at 30 iPad to put cases on, and just the process of like putting those on there just wears your fingers out.
Yeah, because they're really stiff when you start, you know. I remember putting the last ones on when we were unwrapping the Apple cases a couple of years back. It was, first of all, there's so many layers to unwrap, but also the glue that Apple glues their product boxes together with is really, really, really strong. So it was forcing it open with your fingers, because obviously you don't want to use a knife in that situation because you could cut the case. So it was just, it took us literally days to get through all that stuff.
No, I don't know about your custodial staff, but then they always hate me for about like a week or two when we were doing unboxing, because I'm like, they come and clear them out, and then 20 minutes later, there's like more boxes outside my office, because my trash can isn't big enough to put them all in there. And so I think they'll come by like, is this trash? And I'm like, yeah. I apologize to them, because I just really feel bad that like they keep doing their job on their schedule, and I keep putting out like, you know, at more than an average amount of garbage a day. But what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? I think one of the things in the UK, we obviously don't get the iPads sent to us in the sort of convenience boxes that they have in the US. I think we're getting ours in retail packaging. So there's going to be layer upon layer upon layer of unwrapping for that as well.
Oh, yeah, those retail packages are like the bulk boxes are great, because it has the barcode on the outside, so you can scan it to get like the serial number. But then they put the power cables like five to, like you get a, you know, get five in there, which is amazing, especially for the minis. And then they send the power cables in one box for like per five. We actually, we have a garden outside of our school, and somehow like the teacher that heads that up used some of the boxes from that iPad with the garden. So we were able to recycle some of those. I don't really know what that was about, but of course, even with that, it's still, just the way that the cardboard is like, it just wears on your fingers when you're just, you know, constantly sitting there opening, you know, you got to open the main box, and then you got to slide them out and try not to drop them. And then you got to open each individual box. And first word that I think definition of a first world problem.
My hands are so full packing so many iPads.
Yeah. Then you look in my office and it's like, they're just like, if someone broke in my office now, they would just have so much money. I don't even know. Like, you know, a funny story is like the year the iPad came out, like we ordered 10 that summer to try. Mm-hmm. And we had, so for some reason, like four of them were sitting in our headmaster's office, like in a box. Well, somebody broke in and stole some, and we didn't know it because we hadn't figured out what we're going to do with them yet. Well, like the kids' parents like discovered them and realized they were from our school, because like they had, like we had put, I think we put like either a barcode or something on the back of them. And so they brought them back, and we had no idea that they'd even been stolen.
Good fortune right there.
Yeah. You know what? Our campus is tough in the summer because we have this organization called World Changers that comes in. And I think I may have mentioned this before. And like, they actually sleep here, like in our classrooms. Like it'll be like, you know, 30 kids in a classroom sleeping, and they go out in the community during the day, do service projects, and people get into roofs. But like, they're terrible about like, you know, unplugging your, you know, computers and things like that. And it's like, this is the week when like the teachers come back and like we're trying to assess damage every year of like windows are broken, carpet stained, and it's tough.
Challenge. Yep. Awesome. So what's our topic for tonight, Bradley? What have you been thinking about while you've been away?
Well, you know, it's funny. I blogged probably more so than I normally do while I was off because, I mean, what are you going to do when it's like 5 o'clock in the morning? And the beauty of your iPhone is I actually like find blogging from my iPhone. I don't know, kind of nice. I use the Squarespace app and just kind of go to town. And I don't know, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes. There's a company called Educational Networks of America, and they've gotten two big contracts here recently to do statewide wireless in Idaho and in Maine. Mm-hmm. And so basically, it's a turnkey solution for the entire state with all their public schools, and they're what's called a managed service provider. And so I heard about the Idaho contract like on a Friday, and I really spent the weekend thinking about that. And it got me thinking, like, what does the future of our jobs look like? Like, one of the things we just did is we just outsourced payroll. We have a company that we're paying, you know, not a ton of money to, that they take care of our payroll now. And so it's like, you know, more and more of our jobs, like sections of our jobs, you know, I guess slices might be a better word, can be offshored to another company. I mean, we've done that with email. We've done that with a lot of things. And so where does, like, you know, as we continue with this trend, like, where does that leave? Not necessarily you and me, because I like to think that you and I bring maybe more to the table in terms of the educational aspect and thinking about things. Mm-hmm. But like, if you're just a pure, you know, system administrator, like, where does that leave you in 10 to 15 years or even 5 years? And so that's why I wrote that, wrote an article called Managed Service Providers and Employees Who Don't Need Us, or Employees Who Don't Need the IT Department. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And I knew when I wrote it and published it that I would get a ton of feedback, both like, either you're crazy or, you know, you're dead on. And I did. That was, you know, it was kind of split down the middle. And I had a friend of the show, Justin North, who is an IT director at a school here near us. And he was, I think, either texting me or tweeting back at me saying, like, he doesn't agree with it. He was talking about all the things that he does at his school. And I said, well, Justin, you're one of like the future. Like, you know, you're doing what you need to do to keep yourself in a job. Like, you're bringing more than just, plugging in patch cables and up patching servers. Like, you know, you got to do more than that to be relevant in the next 5 to 10 years. I said, you're doing that, so you're not who I'm talking to. Mm-hmm. And you know, then he said, oh, okay, I got it now. And so, like, you know, that's, you know, if I was just a pure system administrator, like, you know, with these companies, these big managed service providers, you know, you can easily in some ways be outsourced. Like, these are turnkey solutions. They come in and do everything. Like, they say, well, all right, we'll do your cabling, we'll do your switches, we'll do your firewall, we'll do your wireless. You know, we'll handle all the backend infrastructure. And so thinking about where our employees are, where our students are, you know, I think I mentioned in the blog post, like, when we just hired some new teachers, and I, you know, of course we use Google Apps, and I said, hey guys, you know, have you used Gmail before? Like, oh yeah, you know, one of the teachers said that we use Google Apps at my last school, and the other one is at a college, and she said, well, my personal account is in Gmail. So I said, well, we use Google for our email. The only difference is it has our logo on it instead of the Gmail logo. And so I gave them their temporary passcode, and I gave them their username and like our customized address to log in that kind of already has our domain filled in. And I said, you know, you just go log in here. You'll set yourself up a temporary passcode. I said, if you want to add to your iPhone, you can just tell it's a Gmail account and you put in your full email address for the username. Both of them figured out how to add to their iPhones without any assistance to me, you know, for me past that. And so I feel like these are the type of employees that, you know, you're thinking about the next 5 to 15 years, like, that we'll be hiring. Like, they don't need people like me to come in and, you know, set every little aspect up of their machine. Like, they can, you know, if it's an AirPrint based printer, like, they can figure out how to add that to their Mac. You know, obviously if it's an AirPrint based printer, they don't need my help at all on the iPhone because it just works.
It's just right there.
So yeah, it's like, you know, just it works. And so, you know, and I kind of got some of the data from the article from a Gartner article, and it was talking about how, and I'll again put this link in the show notes, you know, how big of an environment this is going to be, even in 2013, like, they're estimating there'll be $288 billion spent on technologies to leverage BYOD and infrastructure as a service, like IaaS. You know, we're familiar mm-hmm. with software as a service, is infrastructure as a service. So I don't know. I wrote that, and again, got positive and negative feedback, but you know, we talked about it a little bit over Twitter, but I'm curious to hear, you know, you know, what do you, you know, when you hear managed service provider, what do you think of, and what do you see as the pitfalls? You know, if you're, you know, if you were going to a new school and they said, Fraser, we're going to have somebody handle all the network stuff. We just want you to handle our iPad deployment and teach. Like, you know, what would you, what would your concern be?
It's interesting you ask that because, I mean, we at Cedars, we've never used a managed service provider as such, but I know a lot of people who work in schools where they do it or and have. And I say have deliberately because some of them no longer do for good reason in many cases. And I think what that says to me is it sort of says to me these tasks are now going to be done to contract rather than to the responsive needs of the school. Now, that's okay in some cases. And we certainly, in the on this show in the past, we've sort of advocated for using things like Google Apps and using as many kind of off-site services as we can. I've just today set up our Casper Suite server on Amazon EC2. So again, infrastructure as a service is working well for us too. But I think some schools that I've talked to and some people I've talked to have been very negative about managed service providers. It was a big thing in the UK a few years ago. There was a program down in England called Building Schools for the Future. And as part of that, it wasn't a mandated part of that, as far as I know. I'm not an expert on the particulars of the rules of that program, but a lot of schools, it was basically involved in refreshing school buildings, building new schools. And as part of a lot of those schools that were built, the IT infrastructure was built by and then run by companies who did these managed services. And what the experience has been that has been reported to me, and this is just what I've heard, it's not necessarily universal, but I think sometimes the people who are most unhappy with their managed service providers are the ones that want to talk about it the most. And what I think some people have found is they found systems built to a contract, services provided to a contract, and those contract regulations being very strict, strictly written and also very strictly interpreted, such that a lot of things that you might want to do are not part of the contract. And sometimes if that contract's running for 3 years or 5 years, you might end up going through the whole life of the contract without necessarily moving ahead much further than where you were. So an example, I was talking to somebody earlier this year who was working in a school where they had a managed service provider, and he was still using, what was he using? He was using Leopard, not even Snow Leopard, but just Leopard in his school. And this was, you know, January of 2013 I was talking to him. It wasn't years ago. So, and the reason for that was basically that the contract had specified, you know, a certain level of support, a certain level of service, but there was nothing in the contract that said that the service provider had to move the service on as the world evolved around them. And of course, there was nothing in the contract about iPads or mobile devices or bring your own device or Wi-Fi for student access or anything like that. So what they had found was that the world had evolved around them, but the managed service that they had was really kind of stuck in the period in which it was negotiated and signed for. So I guess my fear around these things is that if you sign contracts and then you can't modify those contracts later, you may end up being very static for a period of time and then making sort of very punctuated leaps forward in evolution rather than just smooth progress as you can adopt new things.
Well, yeah, because especially if you make those have to make those huge jumps from a training perspective, that can be you know, quite troublesome, because if your staff is kind of like they're comfortable with the same things for 3 years, and it's all right, you know, we're going from Snow Leopard to, you know, Mavericks, and it's like that's a huge jump for people. And you know, the part about running it to you know, right off the contract is it definitely true, because especially if you're in a public education and it's set at the statewide level, you don't. You know, if a school has kind of an edge case, they don't have to bend. They don't have to help you. They're following the contract. Mm-hmm. They're being paid by the state or, you know, the higher governing authority, and they're not real concerned about your edge case. Where, you know, if I deploy something and then we have an edge case, I can actually make changes to that and say, all right, let's think of a better way to do that. I mean, we do that all the time. We make plans. You know, we see where it didn't work in this one situation, so we'll modify it to work.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge, though, because I'm not unsympathetic to the people who run these services as well, because if you think about it, you know, if you sign a contract for a certain amount of money, and that amount of money will never change, I mean, let's face it, authorities and school governing boards or whatever structure is in place in your country, if they agree to pay, you know, £100,000 for IT, let's say, they don't want the MSP people coming back later on and saying, oh, well, actually, because this guy asked for iPads, it's actually going to be 150, you know. So they've got to make sure that their costs line up as well. So there's reasons on both sides for things to be agreed, but the consequence of that is that if there's not flexibility built into the whole program, then you can end up in a very static world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I understand if I'm starting a school today, I'm not saying that the MSP is the best thing. My thing is I can see where if I'm, you know, a headmaster at a new school, starting a new school from the ground up, and a MSP comes in and pitches me and says, look, this will be a turnkey solution. We will handle everything. You won't need anybody on site. We will handle every aspect of your technology, from the deployment, from the planning to the troubleshooting. I see where that, you know, where they are interested in that, because again, why are we outsourcing our payroll at our office now? You know, occasionally, like, we'll have, there are hiccups. Like, we had a situation where our finance person was actually out with cancer for a few weeks. Like, I had cancer surgery, had to recover. Like, getting payroll done was very complicated because, again, small organizations, you kind of don't always have a backup. Like, if I was out for 3 weeks with surgery, like, it would be very, very tough. And so from a high level perspective at a school, like, I see why they're trying to, like, in some ways, it's almost like insurance. Like, you're hedging your bets. It's like, look, you know, somebody else will handle that. Well, we can focus on teaching, and we can, you know, we have, you know, easy access to know what we're going to have to pay. It's simple. We know it'll just work. If something breaks, we're going to take care of it. No hidden charges. You know, I get it. Like, I absolutely get it. I'm not saying it's the right thing, but if you have someone that just is looking at technologies truly as a cost center, like, I see why they would do it.
Yeah. And I think we can peel this another layer deeper, Bradley, I think, as well, which is that there are some things that everybody does basically the same. And there are some things that everybody needs their own spin on it. And I think that where I've seen the biggest mistakes being made in this is when people don't divide those two things correctly, if you know what I mean. Let's take some examples, right? Email. Everybody basically wants an email system that just works, right? And that's why Google Apps for schools is very successful, and almost everybody who uses it is very happy with it, because it's pretty rare, apart from having your domain on the email, you know, what more, how does my school's email have to be different from your school's email, right? Not much, okay? So, I mean, you know, we both want the best spam filtering. We both want those features, you know. So outsourcing something like email to Google makes a ton of sense to me, as does, you know, running a server for XYZ thing like your Casper suite or whatever. But where I've seen big mistakes being made is where people outsource things that they actually need to manage themselves. And the big mistake I've seen a lot of people make is where they outsource internet filtering. And they just, you know, somebody comes in and they says, well, you know, put this box in and we will handle all the filtering for you. It's some kind of proxy thing that sits on the network. But then the procedure for getting any changes made to that to that filtering process is incredibly complicated, or it requires, you know, approval, or there's some kind of heavyweight process for getting that change made. And that's actually something that needs to be handled in the school, because that's a service that has to be quickly responsive to a changing kind of educational environment, if you like. You know, this week we're going to do this topic, and oh, there's a critical website that's just, you know, gone into the filtering system, for example. It's a classic thing that you see a lot in schools where the filters are maybe managed at an authority level or somewhere outside the school, and every school in an area gets the same set of filters. You come into school and a website works one day, and you come in the next day and it doesn't work because somebody somewhere else put it into the filter for whatever reason. And that kind of thing is something that can be a showstopper in the classroom. And that needs to be something that's under the control of not necessarily the classroom teacher, although perhaps yes, but it has to be something that can be quickly fixed within the school. Whereas with email, you know, what's the problem going to be? Maybe the spam filter gets a little overzealous or something, but for the most part, there are things you can do locally to sort that out. So I think the key skill, and maybe the problem is that people who negotiate and sign these contracts don't always have that both technical and educational understanding, the key skill is to outsource the things that won't change very quickly and keep in-house the things that will change quite often. And to me, that's really where I try to make that decision between what's going to go out and what's going to stay under my own control.
Now, I agree, because they're both of the content filters that we use obviously are automatically updated. We use a SonicWall, and then we use OpenDNS, and they're obviously changing really every day. Mm-hmm. And so if a teacher has something that's blocked, even if it's always been blocked, but she needs it for a certain reason, she can literally text me and be like, hey, can you unblock this? Like, I need this next period. Well, I can, from my phone, change it. Yeah, I can either hit either one of those content filters from my phone and change them. And so that kind of reactive, I'm changing it within seconds or minutes, where if you've got like a governing authority on that, it might be a week. And again, in a classroom setting, that's a showstopper, because, you know, if a teacher doesn't feel like if they have that bite them one or two times, they're just going to quit trying. It's like, well, I guess it'll work, but it probably won't, so I won't count on it. So we'll do something else. And that's what we ultimately are trying to avoid.
Yeah, because that's an enormous cost for your school as well. Particularly when teachers do work at home, and then they come into school and they're surprised by the way the filters have changed in school or are set up in school, and they end up doing work again. You know, find a website that works in the school and do the same job again because the one I wanted to use is blocked or whatever. It's tricky. I mean, the thing I was just thinking about there, just looking around my classroom here. App installation on iPads, for example, is that something you should outsource, or is that something that you should keep in-house? I would very much argue that's something that should stay in-house. Whereas, unlike you, Bradley, I have not been trained as an Apple repair person, because I can just take that to the Apple store. And I can outsource the ability to fix iPads. I don't want to have to deal with that. But the ability to deploy iPads, that's absolutely a skill that's got to be in-house.
Yeah, I mean, because let's say you have an MSP that says, hey, we'll take care of matching your curriculum to applications. What if a teacher sees something else that's like, hey, you know, I'd like to, this would really work in a kind of non-traditional way. I want to use this. Can we get this on there by Monday? Well, yeah.
Good luck with that.
I guess before we move on, let's take a quick sponsor break and take Silent Light. Thanks, Silent Light, for sponsoring the show. Do you ever wish you could have two teachers in a class? Meet Silent Light, your silent ally, here to help you manage your classroom noise levels. With your new helping hand, you can set noise level targets with students and teach with ease as students manage their own volume and are rewarded by Silent Light. No more shushing. I've been saying that a lot to my son when he cries, the newborn. A lot of shushing. Leave noise to Silent Light and focus on the task of teaching. Search for Silent Light on the App Store or find out more at topstoryapps.com. That's TOPSTOREY apps.com. When Glenn, the guy that runs Top Story Apps, emailed me and was kind of telling me about it earlier in July, I immediately thought back to my elementary school cafeteria. And we had a lady with a bullhorn that she would always say, like, all right, guys, you're getting a little bit too loud. And then we would have this thing called silent lunch where you, like, if we were too loud. And of course, it's not fair because there was no technology. So it was totally up to her judgment. So she would just like, all right, guys, silent lunch. And you'd sit there in silence for like 10 minutes for a 20-minute lunch, which, you know, looking back, it's like, you know, we're kids. Let us just talk. I mean, what's it matter in the cafeteria? What does it matter? But yeah, I don't know.
Is when the operation of the cafeteria breaks down because nobody can hear what anybody's saying.
Yeah, so it's one of those neat apps that when the iPad was released, like, I would have never have thought to have an app like this. Obviously, it's using the built-in microphone, and of course, if you've got a TV in the room, you can mirror it to an Apple TV if you have that. So that's really neat. Of course, I love the name of their company, TopStoryApps.com. Story is the last name of the developer. So, like, I was like, that's a great name for a company.
I didn't realize that when I was
So you look at you earlier. Yeah, it's Top. Man, that is like one of those, like, you couldn't have made it any better. So again, thanks to Silent Light for sponsoring the show this week. You're really, really inexpensive app. Well, I think last time I checked, it was $3.99. So it's one of those, like, if you're a teacher and you have that issue one day and it saves you, like, it's money well spent. So again, search for Silent Light on the iTunes App Store. Do we need to say iTunes App Store? I guess people just assume we're talking about
I think you're supposed to say the App Store.
The App Store with a capital T. So I need to change the coffee.
You have to pronounce the space between app and store as well. It's App Store.
The App
Store. Because if it's App Store, that's Amazon.
I always feel like when I tell somebody, like, you know, we've talked about, like, is like a Mac app. I always want to say application still. Like, that's a Mac application.
It's because of your gray beard.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is completely off the subject. Talking about apps, we've hired some new employees at our church. And, like, a lot, there's just one department that uses iWork a lot. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'll, you know, get them a Mac and we get them set up. We still install Office, you know. Please don't email me about that. I know I don't want to install Office either, but they use Office. But this department uses iWork. And so these employees, but hey, I, you know, we use Pages. Can you install that on my machine? And it's like, I can't. It's like, well, I have to go tell them, like, well, look, it's sold to the App Store now. And I don't really have a way to create an App Store account for you. So, like, if you have one personally, you can just buy it there, then just expense it out. Or you can just make one for your work and use that and put your work credit card. It's like, I don't know. Like, maybe we need, I just, you know, we kind of haven't figured that out for the Mac yet, like how to do that kind of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, that's been tricky for a while.
And that's because that's the only way you sell. Like, if I could buy the disk, or if I could, like, buy a volume license of the actual, like, DMG file, I would. But, like, when you buy a volume license through Apple, they give you Mac App Store codes. But mm-hmm. I still have that issue of, like, having to tell them, like, go create an account. You know, if they would just let us sign into the App Store with our Google ID, like, we would be set.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
But you know, going back to the content filter, like, that's a perfect example mm-hmm. of a way that if you give up too much control, how that can really impact you day to day. Where you design the system so it didn't interfere with you, so it just would, quote unquote, just work, and there would be no hidden surprises. But then, I mean, you know, technology it just kind of evolves, and there's no, and really there's no perfect filter. Like, if you ever are talking to a filtering company. And, you know, they say, oh, they were perfect. Then, you know, I don't know.
Perfect filter is pulling your plug out the wall.
Well, you know, you talking about, you know, teachers working at home and coming into the school. Like, I really believe that. But, you know, because it's like, I want to operate my network as close to wide open internet as possible. I want, I mean, outside of, like, pornography, I want us to err on the side of too open rather than too closed. Because, you know, teachers find a, you know, if they're searching on Google Images for, some sort of, like, activity that works, then I don't know. Like, I want them to be able to find what they need. And we had one of our fifth grade teachers came in and was talking about one of, like, the awesome things she found on Pinterest for using in math this year. Because I'm thinking we need to do a training session on, like, how to use Pinterest in your classroom to, like, find new things to do. Like, you know, not, we shouldn't be blocking Pinterest because teachers spend time on there. We should be training them on how to better use Pinterest, because that's, like, a great way that teachers collaborate.
Yeah, there's a whole kind of dark internet of teachers doing things on Pinterest that I've not got my head around at all.
Yeah, we often wonder how, like, Pinterest makes money. Like, I've often said that they just need to have, like, a thing where if a teacher puts up a board, you can buy the stuff that she used on that activity right there on the spot. Like, that you should just be able to be like, buy this thing, like, $10, you know.
Affiliate links for educational.
Yeah. You know, Bob Martins at bobmartins.net. I think it's how you pronounce it. I'll put a link in the show notes. It's bobmartens.net. I don't know the guy, but we kind of connected on Twitter after this. But he talked about this article, and he had a pretty good quote. You know, he referenced the part where I said, you've got to become more than just a broke fix person or a sysadmin. You've got to help turn your IT department into a solutions department. You've got to be able to do things that the MSP can't. You've got to be able to solve business problems with technology that create operational efficiencies. You need to be able to connect puzzle pieces. And he had a really great response to that. He said, that about sums it up. It's not enough anymore just to keep the lights on, but it's time to start pushing things forward in different areas to try to stay ahead of what people are doing. Sadly, working in IT can be a very reactive place. You know, the network is down. You have to fix it. Then he says, however, I say this for myself, time needs to be spent on trying to find areas to help push things forward in a good way. You know, it might mean I need to get out of my comfort zone, but it also means that the zone might expand just a little bit at the same time. And I thought, you know, that's so perfect about, you know, that's the kind of, what I was trying to get across is it's not saying that every IT department is going to be outsourced. It's that you need to be pushing your skill set forward to do things that an MSP can't. You know, whether it's like knowing, you know, how to best manage iPads in a one-to-one deployment, you know, in a way that an MSP is never going to touch. Or, you know, it's a way to structure your school website with your sort of information system to do integration that an MSP can't. It's about evolving your skill set. You know, it's kind of like any other industry. You've got to do things that, you know, where you make yourself valuable.
I think in large part, I think what that involves is getting into some classrooms and seeing what goes on in there. A lot of IT people in schools do. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that everybody's a hermit or anything like that. But the most successful schools that I see with IT are schools where the IT is under the control of somebody who either currently is or used to be a teacher. And it was somebody just brought in from another IT in another field to just to run the show. That's really my sense of what is a very successful school with IT and what's not. There's other factors as well, don't get me wrong. And money's one of them, leadership's one of them, control's one of them. But I think really when it comes down to being responsive and being having your IT department be liked by the staff, teachers have to feel like that person is one of them and understands their pains as well.
I agree with you. I absolutely agree because if you're used to managing enterprise IT at a large corporate environment, you come into a school, you're going to have a different mentality that if you have it. I mean, one of my goals is to make everything as open as possible. One of the things that we had some new faculty training of our curriculum, and we have a veteran teacher that's our kind of school trainer for this curriculum. Mm-hmm. And she kind of got back to me that she was talking to the new faculty, and I always tell our new teachers kind of like the roles of our headmaster. Like, I always tell them the two things about our headmaster you need to know is don't let him be surprised by any like a parent email. Like if you have an issue with a student that day and you think the parent might email him that night, like go talk to him first, like give him a heads up. Second thing is be on time. Like if you do those two things, you'll get along with our headmaster fine. And the teacher told our new faculty, like, look, Bradley will always listen to you. He may not always have the answer you want or may not be able to do exactly what you need him to do, but he'll always try and he'll always listen. And I thought, that's to me is a big compliment because that's the kind of the life I try to live. I try to take complicated technology and make it into where our teachers can use it. Like I, try to be that bridge of technology to the classroom. And so I took that as a big compliment that, a veteran teacher would say that about me. Because there have been times I've told her, hey, we can't do that. And there have been times I've said, hey, we'll take care of that right away. I agree with you that you've got to, you said it a long, long time ago, you've got to have coffee with your users.
Mm, yeah, that's my favorite aphorism, if you like, is you got to drink coffee with the people who use your systems. Because if you don't face those people on a regular basis, you don't know what's bothering them. You don't know whether they're in good mood or bad mood. You eventually find out somehow, when things come to a head. But if you are in there sort of knowing them and knowing what they like, knowing what they dislike, knowing what kind of thing upsets them and what kind of things they're up for taking a challenge on, that's the kind of thing, that human side of it is the kind of thing that a company outside the school building working to a contract is never going to take into account when they're thinking about the things that they can do for your school.
Well, an MSP is largely going to do the bare minimum to create the fewest surprises possible. Just do the bare minimum to the contract, basically give everybody what the contract says, and not necessarily push the edge a little bit in terms of like what kind of access can we do, what kind of tricks can we do. Like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example. Oh, I got one sitting right next to me. Actually, I've got an old MacBook sitting next to me that's basically a glorified print server for Printopia. So we can do printing to the iPad. An MSP is never going to install that. They're just not, because it's not the enterprise level kind of environment. They're looking for some sort of like server-based solution that can do this. I've got an old Mac with a $20, not even like the pro version, just like the $20 Printopia.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect example. And I'm like, when I did that, I didn't think anybody would use that. But then what's funny is like on that Mac, when it prints, it doesn't close like the print queue. It keeps it open. Every printer is always open. Like they print multiple times a day from their phone, like personal loan phones, from their iPads. It's just like they're printing all day long from iOS devices. And that's not to toot my own horn that I came up with that, but that's, just something I was trying to think outside the box. It's not a real enterprisey solution. Maybe it doesn't work all the time. It's not perfect, but hey, we'll do something just to try.
Yeah, whatever works, And I think also quite often one of the things that we do here is we experiment on a small scale first and then we roll it out. And I think that experimentation is always sort of informed by actual classroom practice. So last year we trialed Dropbox, we trialed Evernote, and we trialed Google Drive. And we actually did that in classrooms. And we quickly learned some things about Evernote that we realized were not going to work for us. So we decided we ended up using Google Drive. But I think more often than not, you're sort of presented with one of these solutions and say, well, our solution is Google Apps plus Google Drive, and that's it. You know, and what if Evernote was correct? Well, that's another thing, and that'll be more money or whatever, you know. So that kind of experimentation that you do alongside teachers is incredibly valuable because you learn things there that you don't necessarily learn just doing, like,
I think,
you
know, I lost you.
Load testing to Dropbox or whatever, or doing a spreadsheet to figure out how much things cost, you know. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure there are service providers that go into schools and do the research in there as well. But just sometimes, and you know, the thing we found with Evernote basically was that because we were wanting to implement more and more video in our curriculum, video production and video building off an iPad, and then how do we save it, we realized that Evernote wasn't going to work for us because each note could only be 100 megabytes and many videos were going to be more than that. So that was something that was kind of specific to our school. Another school that didn't care about video, you know, Evernote would probably be fine for them, you know. And similar, you know, if you want to go to be a real big Google Docs school, for example, that's great if your kind of curriculum is focused on things like, you know, word processing and spreadsheets and the kind of things that Google Docs is really good at and sharing together. Whereas if you wanted to be, you know, a big video production school and you're taking video outside the classroom and uploading it to places, then maybe iPad would work better for you in that situation. So I think it sort of turns out that depending on what you're, that's one of the things that has to stay local in your school, because that's something that changes from school to school to school. What's the best device for what you want to do? What's the best services to support that device? And then from there on, you know, what are the things that you build out in your network? What about your provisioning of Wi-Fi and bandwidth and so on? That's something that still has to be managed inside the school, whereas everybody needs email, and we can put email out. Filtering is kind of on that boundary.
Yeah, no. And not all services are the same. They, you know, some are more universal. They're just different.
Yeah.
So let's take another quick break and thank our next sponsor, Jamp Software. And they're no strangers to being discussed on the show. I think actually a couple of shows ago, the whole show is about your installation process. So we appreciate them sponsoring the show. Jamp Software provides ICT staff with enterprise tools that power widespread use of Apple technologies in education organizations. Now, to me, that's one of the things that I like about Jamf is that they're Apple focused. You know, there's a ton of MDM providers, and they all do great things. But you know, if you're into the Apple world, Jamf is a great partner because that's their bread and butter, that's their focus. So now with Casper Focus, they have placed these powerful technologies directly into the hands of teachers that work with students every day. Casper Focus enables teachers to unlock the full potential of the iPad in the classroom by ensuring that all students are engaged on the same activity and using the iOS devices in the way that the technology was intended. You can learn more about Jamf at jampsoftware.com. That's jamfsoftware.com. And thanks for them for sponsoring the show. You got me thinking, I saw your tweet. What was the process like on moving that to an Amazon EC2 server?
Yeah, so I basically today, I have my, remember we talked a while ago about you, when you buy Casper, you get this kind of, it's called Jumpstart. It's a sort of half day to full day training session about how to use it. And that's happening for us tomorrow. And because of our slightly flaky school internet connection, I was concerned that that wasn't going to work very well. You know, and what if that goes down in this half day that's been scheduled for like 2 months? So I decided to take the opportunity and basically reinstall the Casper suite on an Amazon EC2 server. Now, it wasn't really a migration as such, because basically I installed a new version and I threw away my old version. So, because I hadn't really configured it to have, you know, the devices aren't enrolled in it. I haven't put app codes in it yet. So it was the time now to decide, well, I'm going to get rid of that and I'm going to put one up on Amazon instead. So I set up an Amazon EC2 machine running a Ubuntu 12 server and installed it there. I was previously running it on a Mac OS X machine in the school, a Mac Mini. So now this is running on an Amazon machine instead. And the process was, you know, as straightforward as it would otherwise have been. I just had to change the default security, the firewall rules on EC2 to let through the port number that Tomcat runs on. when you have the GSS installed. But otherwise, it was pretty pain-free. We've got our jumpstart tomorrow, as I said, so maybe we'll talk about that next week. I'll let you know how that goes as well. But it's been pretty smooth sailing so far.
Yeah, infrastructure as a service, like Amazon EC2 is powering the whole internet. It's always funny when it goes down, like you just like, oh, wait, everything's down. Like the internet is, Netflix is down?
Every company less than 2 years old is broken.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think even part of iCloud, no, that's maybe, I think part of iCloud runs on Azure Mobile Services.
Yes, I've heard that, yeah.
I got the email from Apple a little while ago that they're finally ending my complimentary iCloud storage. I've had 20 gigabytes since iCloud launched because as a Mobile Me member, okay. And like I think they're not extending that this year, and they have for the past two. So sad day for my iCloud. Yeah, okay. I use 2 gigs. Like I just don't use that much. My wife and I have separate accounts, so we just don't use that much.
I'm always bumping up against it. Do you back up all your devices to iCloud?
Well, I have two. I have an iPad and iPhone 5 that are backed up to it. And I don't store a lot of photos. Like all of my photos go into Dropbox and then they go into Everpix. And then, so that's how I view my photos on my mobile devices. So I really don't keep that much, data that iCloud will back up. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm using 1.96. But again, my wife and I have separate accounts. We have separate iCloud accounts.
Yeah.
So I imagine if like she was using the same one I was and like she had her iPhone and her iPad, we would be getting close because that'd probably put us at like, 4.5 or so. I have like really specific camera workflows with her. Like I open Dropbox like at least like once a day on her phone and that uploads all of her photos, which I've shared that folder, her camera folder with me. And then I get them and I can put them in where they need to go. And I have a very, very specific picture workflow, but I love Everpix. I don't know if you've checked that out. That's a really great service.
I have not. I only just recently started using the Dropbox camera upload feature, and mainly just as another backup for videos and photos. But I was also in the habit of keeping all those photos on the phone as well. So I ended up having like a 10 gigabyte backup for my iPhone, which worked okay. But then I transitioned one device to iOS 7, which then ended up I had another backup of that device and so on. So I ended up bloating out my storage space quite a lot and bumping up against the limit.
I'm actually all iOS 7 now. I went all in yesterday. It's working. Beta 4 works great. I got one app that doesn't totally work, but other than that, it works perfect.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting times for the next quarter. I've had it on my phone and I had to get my phone replaced, so I went back to iOS 6. Things like that, but I found one or two apps, third-party apps, that were not very happy, and it was mainly alignment things. A lot of the sort of geometry and metrics seemed to have shifted around quite a lot, and apps that were doing more customized things, some of them sort of just ended up looking a bit kind of Picasso, and everything was shifted around the wrong place. So there was one or two apps where there was data input pickers that they had built that were custom, and they were kind of moved off to the side, so I couldn't actually enter the data correctly that I needed to enter. So I had to, because they were quite important to me, I had to sort of roll back to iOS 6 for now. But I'm sure they'll... It was funny, though, because one of the companies that I wrote to them, it was a big sort of corporate company, and I said, oh, guys, your app's broken in iOS 7, and they wrote me back and said, thank you for your inquiry about the Kindle Fire. Hang on a minute. Who's wrong here?
Yeah, it's like it's automated system now. Yeah. My only app that's not working perfect is Wunderlist. And it works, but I just can't like edit any of the tasks. But I can deal with that. It's been nice. Beta 4 is really fast. So I'm optimistic that I'm really going to like it. And I'm sure we'll have a show at some point on upgrading our deployments to it mid-year. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
It's like somebody's trolling us at Apple. We're going to really, really mess with those guys.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
School starts.
Yeah, it's going back to finishing up that MSP discussion. Like you wonder, like if you did do an iPad deployment through an MSP, like, that would be something you'd have to really make sure you included in there was like the transition to new versions of iOS, because I look at new versions of the Mac differently than new versions of iOS, because if you're still running Snow Leopard today, you can still do a ton on the Mac, especially if you're using a lot of web-based services. Mm-hmm. Obviously Chrome and Firefox still work great on it.
Yeah.
And but if you're if you sign a 3-year iOS lease and it doesn't include any sort of upgrades, like you're really behind at this point. Like if you're still running iOS 4 and your lease is just ending, it's that's a lot of apps would be broken.
Well, absolutely, and I think Well, I guess since iOS 5, one of the things now is that you can't stop anybody from upgrading their iPad. You know, the kids could just do it, you know, and that would be it. There's no administrator blocking of that kind of thing. But yeah, it's an interesting challenge, and I think primarily that's just to do with the relative maturity of both of those platforms, because the Mac is obviously very mature, and iOS much less mature. And I mean, the way somebody described it to me once, he said, "Look, on an immature platform, you have one or two very well defined pathways to success, and if you ever step off of those pathways, it's just instant death, and you will fail." Whereas on a mature system like the Mac, there's many, many ways through whatever it is you want to get done. And I think that's just where iOS is today compared to the Mac, is it's quite immature. Obviously, we're getting on for iOS 7, but there's still so many things that could be done, perhaps should be done, probably will be done. And I think the next couple of years could be really interesting. And I think we're going to have to see from Apple, do they have a plan to take iOS to like the next level of productivity, or is it forever going to be stuck at this kind of almost as good as the Mac but not quite level for the more power users amongst us?
You know, for me, you know, kind of recapping our discussion, I think in some ways what makes me better than an MSP is I'm not afraid to fail, and MSPs are afraid to fail because that's not, and it's in their contract that they want.
Yeah,
where I can try to roll something out and it can screw up and say, all right, we're going to abandon that and try something new. Because, you know, they often say if you're not failing, then you're not pushing yourself hard enough. And I want to live in that world where I fail some of the time, because when you do succeed, you succeed, you know, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You got to fail at the very well-defined points in the school year, though.
That's true.
You can't fail 2 weeks before the exam.
No. So I guess two things last in closing. You had a new announcement this week. I guess tell us about it.
Yeah, so just really on the spur of saying it out loud on Twitter and then several people coming back and saying you should do that, I decided I was going to kick off a new blog this week, which is the website is called The Mixed Bag, and the URL is mixedbag.co. And basically what it is I wanted to read very in-depth reviews of computer bags. Okay, and now the internet's full of videos of people unboxing a bag or whatever, but I think sometimes when you read a review of a bag on some kind of mainstream news website, quite often those bags have been looked at, the person has loaded them up with their stuff, and he's like, yeah, it fits, it's comfortable, but living with it for a period of time is a different proposition altogether, and, you know, going out in the rain or the cold, or, you know, I dropped it in a puddle one day or whatever. The things that can happen accidentally as you use a bag are the kind of bits of experience that I wanted to get with a lot of these bags. So I decided I was just going to take this upon myself to do a new site about this. It's not going to be the kind of site that is ever going to turn into a database of all the best computer bags on the market. It's not going to be that. But it's going to be bags that I find interesting. I'll explain why I find them interesting. I'll explain what's good about them, what's bad about them, based on my actual usage of them, rather than just trying one for a couple of days and then sending it back. We're going to try and make it fewer reviews, but better reviews, basically. And it's very much going to be my opinion. I'm not going to try and be the BBC and say, on the one hand this, on the other hand that, but I'm going to say this, you know, I like this bag, I don't like this bag, and here's why. I'm going to try and, it's quite interesting, I decided I was going to use Instagram for both hosting the photos and the videos. So as you know, Instagram now does 15-second videos. So I shot three videos for my first review, which was just of the bag I have, because it was the one I had to start writing about. And I don't know how you thought that worked, Bradley. I know you've had a look at them, but it was an interesting idea, I thought.
I liked it. To me, and I blogged about it yesterday and put a link to it, it's like the perfect use of Instagram video, because it's, you know, I don't need to see a 15-minute review of a bag. Like, there's not, you know, like a, you know, someone talking about a bag 15 minutes live, there's not that much to say about it. But like in those little snippets, like showing the pocket, showing the inside out, showing how the zipper works, like, I kind of thought that's the perfect use for Instagram video. Like, it, of course, I have a love-hate relationship with every bag I've ever owned. Like, I like aspects of it and I hate aspects of it. Like, there are some days I want a bigger bag, some days I want a smaller bag. Mm-hmm. So when you tell me about the site, I thought, like, this is awesome. Like, I just, this is why I love the internet, that like this can be a thing. That like a somebody that's into bags can make a site about bags, and people who are also into bags can follow along. God bless the internet. I don't know. the domain is
that's
great.
That's also why I called it the mixed bag as well, because I wanted to deliberately kind of review a range of different bags. So the first one I did was a backpack. I just received very kindly a review sample already from a company of a sort of 10-inch iPad bag with a quite interesting strap design, which is kind of rubberized webbing strap that's supposed to distribute the weight and stop sliding off your shoulder and things like that. So I'm going to try that out, and that will kind of be my next review in a couple of weeks' time. It's going to be maybe one bag every couple of weeks. It's not going to be five a week or anything like that, but hopefully they'll be in-depth and interesting.
Yeah, and so I think the domain is great too, you know, mixedbag.co. Of course, you've got the same, like you have mixedbag.co on Twitter as well.
Yeah, mixedbag.co on both Twitter and Instagram.
I'll put links in the show notes. Like I love sites like this. Like a couple friends of the show, Stephen Hackett and Sean Blanc, who have a site called Tools and Toys. And they just find cool things that, I like. And it's like, I love sites like that. It's like not updated every day, not updated five times a day. Just like when they find something cool, they just say like, hey, you know, here's something cool we found. Like I bought this and I like it, and you should buy it as well. So, I'm thrilled. I think it's really, and if I owned a bag company, like I would want to send you bags. I think that's going to be the cool thing, is you should be able to do this without having to go broke on buying bags every month.
Well, here's hoping.
I'm sure your wife would hope that as well. what do you mean you have 10 bags, and why are we buying more bags?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way that I can do this and sort of build myself up a massive stash of bags in my house. I think, yeah.
if a guy like broke into your house, he'd be like, well, what does this guy got going on? He has 45 bags in his closet. What does he do?
Yeah, that's, you're on a no-fly list somewhere.
So, great. We'll have, again, link to that in the show notes, mixedbag.co. Now, lastly, a couple weeks ago, I guess it was probably 2 weeks ago, I tweeted one morning, like, is there a service that I can forward an email to and will send me back a PDF? Because I know, like, with Evernote, you can, like, forward it to email and it'll go into Evernote as, like, an HTML document. But, like, oftentimes, like, I will buy something for work, like, on my phone. It will email me the receipt, but I really want that to be a PDF that I can either throw into Evernote or that I can like throw into Dropbox to then process when I get back to my computer into our purchase system. And listener of the show, I'm going to like butcher his last name, but it's Brian either Almeida or Almeida, but he's at Thunder Keys on Twitter, and I'll put a link to his Twitter handle in the show notes. But he literally like saw that and thought like, I could probably build that, and he did. He has a beta of it up. It's pdfconvert.me. Is the website, but it's not launched yet. It's like still kind of in private beta, but since he's a listener to the show, he wanted to let our listeners kind of test it out. So it's really like, this is not saying it's going to work perfect. Like don't try to make it as part of your workflow fully just yet, because he's still working out the bugs, but it's a pdfconvert.me/beta/out-of-school. And again, we'll have that as a link in the show notes. And he's giving every school listener kind of 10 conversions. He just doesn't want to put a ton of strain on the server just yet. But I think this would be awesome. Like, I think he's planning on eventually making it like a freemium service where you might get like 10 free, and then you could buy X number for $2 or something like that. But I will use the heck out of this, because it's one of those things where I can just like get kind of more stuff processed on my phone. I don't have to leave it in my inbox.
Yeah, it's a different thing from forwarding to Evernote. I mean, you can obviously, for people who use Evernote, you can do that directly. But if you have a workflow that doesn't have an email into, but if you can do an open in on your iOS device and say, well, open this in Dropbox or open this in Google Drive or something, then converting that HTML or plain text email into a PDF before you do that step is going to be something that's pretty useful.
Yeah, and he's working on it, and we'll have the link to that in the show notes. That's in that's just for out of school listeners. So I thought that was pretty cool that he wanted to do that.
Awesome.
Anything else?
I think that's everything.
I am tired. I've been up for 12 hours at this point.
It's time to go to bed.
I guess it's really late on your end, but
it's your end.
Yeah, my son has reflux, and so like he's just not sleeping as well at night. So it's been new parent problems, I guess. But again, thanks to our sponsors, Silent Light and Jamp Software, topstoryapps.com, TOPSTO reyapps.com and then jampsoftware.com, jamfsoftware.com. We'll have links to both in the show notes. Thanks for sponsoring the show. And Frazier, I guess we're out for another week.
Speak to you next week.